Destination.
Breakfast time!
Hello, welcome to T-Bone and Tybus. Can I take your order?
Just want a little breakfast.
Hey, you want some crabs? Because I got some of them.
Get ready to drive through the intersection of football, food, and fun. Featuring producer Dylan.
One of the five best rappers of all time.
Special guests.
Are you serious?
And you. Wake up.
For what?
It's time for T-Bone and Tybus.
Wagwan! Another episode of T-Bone and Tybus. I'm Tybus Powell. We got my man Dylan G behind the glass, keeping us on time and making sure that we got a show next week. And again, joining me, my brother, Joshua Perry. What's going on, JP?
Good morning. Go to hell.
I love that. Love that. Josh, as I was driving in today, I got to thinking about how you and I NFL careers came to an end. When you left because you had too many concussions, correct?
Scrambled them eggs.
When did you start getting concussions?
Well, Tybus, my first documented concussion was in high school. But you know, when you're a little dude playing football, so you know, when you're
a Pop Warner. Oh, okay.
You basically got a bobblehead on your shoulders.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that there was some rattling going on way back in the days, but it started in high school and then went from there.
Josh, I never.
Yes, you did.
No, I did not.
Yes, you did.
How did you know? Give me that, because I don't. How do you know that you suffered a concussion?
And this is problem. This is the problem for a guy like you, for example. Your equilibrium is already a little bit off. So you, it would be harder for you to know.
Do not laugh at him.
My North Star is true. So I know when I'm not feeling like myself.
What do you mean? You don't think my North Star is true?
I think you're a little bit more all over the place. You know?
I disagree.
I
think I'm a pretty sane guy. I feel like I'm pretty.
This is not to say that you're.
I'm pretty.
This is not to say that you're an insane person.
That's what you're implying.
I'm not implying that. I'm not saying that when you have a concussion, all of a sudden you're insane. What I'm saying is that my North Star is true. Okay. And I think that you're a little bit more all over the place.
So I wouldn't know if I suffered a concussion.
I think that you would just be like, okay, this is what it's supposed to feel like.
Okay, let me ask you this. So when you sustained these concussions, how many did you have?
Like six.
Okay, when you sustained all six of these concussions, you like didn't know like plays anymore, like you didn't know where the line
was. My head was hurting.
That's it?
No, I mean, like, could I line up? Sure. Were there some where I'm like, well, tough it out? Sure. Were there others where I'm like, I'm hurt? Yes.
See, Josh, I when you say it like that, there's a strong possibility that I did suffer.
I know. I'm gonna tell you, there's more than a strong possibility. I'm gonna tell you,
no, but it's only really one that I really can recall that like I may have had a concussion, and that was when I was playing in San Fran. We was going up against Dallas, and remember that running back from Alabama? His name was like Bo Scarback or
Scarborough.
Yeah. I tackled him.
Uh huh.
When I tackled him, he's a load. Yeah. When I tackled him, it wasn't the hit on him.
It was when you hit the ground.
I hit the turf.
That's how it happens a lot of times. It's called second impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I got up, like,
You had to sit there for a sec, didn't you?
No, I didn't have to sit there.
I've done that where you hit.
See, well, you gave it away. If you sat there, you gave it away.
When you hit somebody, and then you got to, it's not just laying there, but you got to sit up for a sec and take a deep breath. Before you get to your feet, you probably had a concussion.
So I got up because DVs, you try to pop right back up.
Yeah, all that popping up.
Right back up.
Felt a little tipsy, didn't you?
And I walked to like my spot. I was playing corner.
Uh-huh.
So I knew I was on that side.
Sure.
But like, I didn't know what the play was.
Uh-huh.
First of all, we was huddling first. So we got the play. We broke the huddle. I ran back to my spot.
Like, damn, we in three.
And I got out I got out there and I'm like, what did he say the play was? So I asked the linebacker, what's the play?
He's like, shut up.
He told me what the play was.
And then you were like, I'm good?
I said, I got it.
Okay.
I lined up. And then I said, wait a minute, what's the play?
Okay, so we went from I have never had a concussion.
But I was fine.
To
Josh, I was fine.
I definitely had a concussion.
No. I got my bell rang. You know what I did?
That's what a concussion is.
I smelled the salt. I hit the salt.
Oh, yeah, you can't do that anymore. You can't do that anymore.
So outlawed.
I'm actually immune to the smelling salts.
Of course they don't do nothing for you.
I can... Nothing.
Are you serious?
I'm immune to it.
Was you doing it that much at O-State or something?
No, in the league.
I mean, I did it before every, like, I did it before the kickoff.
So I had...
Like, that was about it, though.
I had a teammate who would take a water bottle.
Yeah.
And put black tape around
it. Put like 100 of them in there.
And we would just, basically, it was like huffing. And I'm literally immune.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Nah, it like burned the hair in my nose when I smelled it.
You'll be fine.
Nah. Well, you know, the crazy thing is, so like when you were done, like your last team was Seattle, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I was there for preseason.
And was that your favorite team to be on?
I wasn't there long enough.
Was Indianapolis your favorite team?
Yes.
You really like Indy.
I liked Indy. My experience
with the Chargers. But they weren't doing
they were ass.
No, because I went to Indy too.
Yeah.
Indy, they were doing the renovations.
They were.
I hated their facilities. Well, I don't know what it looks like now that the renovations is done, but at the time, was the one time in my life where like football felt like a job for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was bad. I was miserable.
So that was the only work you've ever done?
Yes.
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 Good for you.
Was Seattle your favorite spot?
Seattle and San Fran both was fun. Like Seattle.
Did the Seahawks release you twice?
I hate you.
He set you up so bad.
He loves to do that job.
Oh, man. Good workout of you. No, plus one.
Anyways, yes. Seattle for me was fun. Like, I literally...
Yeah, they had a vibe there. Yeah, that place was a whole vibe.
I wanted to go to
going
the facility.
Going into a team meeting there compared to others... So, other places, you go in the team meeting...
Did they make you shoot?
I didn't shoot.
Oh, I did.
But going into the team meetings there... So, like, most of the places, you walk into a team meeting, guys are low energy, they're just shuffling in, they got their hoods up, cinched tight like Kenny... From South Park,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can't really see the face,
yep.
Right? And it's just low energy, and you have a coach who has no motivational skills whatsoever
yep.
up there preaching to you about whatever the word of the day is. You go to Seattle, and there's energy. You got a little music playing. There's a basketball hoop there, a little competition.
Oh, yeah.
I talk about good touching here in the office.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in good touching. This comes from Pete. Pete was very much a slap hands kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dap up your guys. Like, you contact makes groups closer.
Mm-hmm.
That the energy in that building was different than the energy anywhere else I had been.
Yeah, and they used to always say, if you leave here, it ain't like this. And I was always scared to find out. Yep. So when I got cut, I was like, oh, man. But yeah, no place was like Seattle. San Fran was close, though. They didn't have the hoop in there and all that, but it was like, it was a younger crowd. Like, so like, we were all hip, and Kyle Shanahan was a young coach at the time, so he could relate to us.
To the jive.
Yeah, so like, I actually enjoyed my time there. The difference between you and I is yours was, you was forced out from injuries. I was forced out because I just wasn't good enough. We didn't walk out on our own terms. Very seldomly do people walk out on their own terms.
I think it's clear you didn't like your other stops because Richard Sherman wasn't there.
This is true.
No.
Sherm.
Yeah.
Listen.
That's the one common denominator between Seattle and San Francisco.
When I talk to him, he always says, I wonder what your life would have been like if you never met me. That's what he says to me. And you know what I tell him? Probably better. I'm pretty confident that my life would be better. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I was I played safety in college, but when I went to the league, I moved to corner. Problem is, anywhere he was, I was behind him. So I was never going to play because of him. So if I just got away from him and stayed at corner, problem is, when I got away from him, I went back to safety. That's a whole nother story there. But every time he followed me or was with me, that was one corner spot that I knew I couldn't get.
So you went from corner in high school.
I did safety and corner in high school.
Okay. And then
came to Ohio State
started as a corner. And then moved
to nickel, then yes. Safety.
Yes.
Went to the league.
Oh, Urban loved. I got a big nickel. Got a big nickel, number 23.
I don't think after me, I think I was the last big nickel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I followed Orion.
He was basically
Johnson.
A linebacker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Orion.
Yeah. My boy OJ.
Shout out to OJ.
That was my dog, man. Shout out to OJ.
He's a good dude.
He was able to help me get through my freshman year. So shout out to OJ.
Wake up with the resident gambling degenerates, Steve Biddle and Scotty Vegas for On the Money. Sunday mornings at 9.
Presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan. You are listening to the best of T-Bone and Tybus. They're not here, but they're still here. You see, they never let you down. The Fan.
Joining the program via Bryant Heating and Cooling System Fan Guest Hotline, our guy, Dylan Tyre of the Blue Jackets. Dylan, what is going on, man? This is, it's so much going on with the Zach stuff. You got a new assistant coach. You got all these moves being made. What has been the most shocking thing that's happened for you in the past 24 hours with the Jackets?
Well, thanks for having me on, Tybus. I appreciate it. And we certainly do have a lot to talk about, right? Because there's been a lot of different things happening over the course of the last week or so. And I think obviously the biggest story right now is what's going on with Zach Werenski. It sounded like he was going to be traded away from the Columbus Blue Jackets. But yesterday, Zach and Don Waddell, the Blue Jackets general manager and president of hockey operations, came out kind of with a joint statement saying that Zach is going to stay going forward with the Blue Jackets and that he's committed to winning here in Columbus. You know, I think this was just something crazy that a couple of weeks ago it came out that Zach Werenski wasn't sure about his future in Columbus. And I think if you take that at face value, you know, you can understand it, right? The Blue Jackets have missed out on the playoffs the last couple of seasons. He wants to be a winner and they are trending in that direction. There it kind of continued to snowball and the rumor built, oh, he wants out right now. Oh, they're listening to trade requests. And while there may have been trade requests and the rumor is out there that Zach Werenski denied a trade to go to Dallas Stars, I think Zach's intent was always to be a Blue Jacket in case something or unless something crazy came up, an offer that, you know, made sense for the Blue Jackets and it made sense for Zach Werenski. And you know, I think he said as much yesterday, saying that he wants to be a Blue Jacket going forward. He wants to try and win in Columbus, and we'll see if the Blue Jackets are able to do that. And, you know, you referenced a couple of moves the Blue Jackets made yesterday. They acquired goaltender Phoenix Copley. He was in the AHL last season with the LA Kings affiliate, the Ontario Reign, and then they signed a depth forward in Ryan Lomberg, who should be a really good guy in the Blue Jackets dressing room. So, yeah, a couple of smaller acquisitions, and I think still some work to be done by the Blue Jackets in the next couple of days.
All right. So from that statement, I want to kind of dig in on this idea of Z being a Blue Jacket moving forward. Is like, do you read that as, you know, the more long-term commitment that I think people are looking for? Or is this just like, yeah, the next couple of years that I'm under contract, like I'm not going to be sniffing around, but who knows after that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're talking about the contract, right? And that was the statement really from the beginning that Zach wanted to be in Columbus, but he also wouldn't commit to the future, you know, beyond his current contract because he wants to see if this team is able to compete. So I think that's been out there for a long time. The Blue Jackets are trying to get better right now to get over that hump. I mean, you know, if you look at things just the way they are, if you look at the facts, two seasons ago, the Blue Jackets took a big step and they just missed out on the Stanley Cup playoffs by essentially one game, one win. They had lots of growth within their own room. You think about players like Adam Fantilli, Dmitry Voronkov, Kent Johnson. All of those guys had good seasons 2 years ago. This past season, the Blue Jackets found themselves almost in an identical spot where they just missed out on the playoffs. Those guys didn't take as large of a step. You know, Adam Fantilli, he grew when it comes to playing a two-way game and really being a team's number one center, but he didn't score as many goals. Kent Johnson completely fell off the map last season. He wants to bounce back in a big way. And Dmitry Voronkov did not have a very good second half of his season last year, despite scoring 17 goals over the course of the entire season. So you didn't have that same growth. The Blue Jackets went out and they got Valeri Nichushkin, who's one of the more underrated forwards in the NHL, and they want to see continued growth from those guys. And if they see all that, this team believes it'll be back in the playoffs, which is exactly what Zach Werenski is looking for.
You know, we've seen Boone Jenner, Captain Boone, is going to the Capitals, which now opens up that captain spot, which is something that a lot of people have been flirting with the idea all towards the end of last season. It was a big topic on our show. Who do you think is in line to get that captain spot?
Well, I think the obvious answer there is Zach Werenski. I think you have a few candidates right now in the Blue Jackets dressing room. Zach Werenski, the longest tenured guy. You know, he's the Blue Jackets' best player. That would make sense if he wants to see. Charlie Coyle, obviously, is a big voice in the Blue Jackets' dressing room. And, you know, he carried a lot of weight in his first season with the Blue Jackets last year. I think a case could be made for a player like Charlie Coyle. Another guy, you know, Matthew Olivier has become a big part of the Blue Jackets' dressing room and is a heart and soul guy. I think some people would like to see that. You know, as it stands, you know, for me, I don't think you have to name a captain right now or right away. I don't know what the Blue Jackets are going to do. But with Rick Bonus being relatively new, I think he needs to get a feel for, you know, what the leadership is going to look like going forward in that room. You know, you said it, no more Boone Jenner. In all likelihood, you know, Eric Branson is a free agent too. It doesn't sound like he's going to be back with the Blue Jackets. So you're losing a lot of leadership and some big voices out of that dressing room. So I think you want to see what you have in there and let things develop over training camp. Like, if you remember when Boone Jenner was named captain, that didn't necessarily happen right away. It happened during Blue Jackets training camp. So we'll see if the time frame is the same, but I would say Zach Werenski is probably the overwhelming favorite to be the next captain.
If he doesn't get it, should fans read into that? Like, maybe potentially they didn't give it to him because he might be getting traded in maybe not this season, but the next year?
No, I don't think they should look into that whatsoever. You know, I don't think Rick Bonus operates that way, and the head coach is going to make that decision who he wants to be the captain of the team for this season, right? Like, they're worried about what they have in that dressing room right now and who you feel is the best guy to lead that team right now and the best guy to speak for that team right now. And if Bonus feels that that's Zach Werenski, that's who he's going to pick. I would not read into that at all.
So you mentioned training camp, and this is kind of big picture spinning forward, but when you look at this hockey team, what are some of the biggest things on the ice that they need to really dig into when they get back out there?
Well, they changed their style just a little bit when Rick Bonus took over last season. They became a more aggressive, in-your-face team when it came to defending. And that's not necessarily, you know, just on the defenseman. It's also on the forwards. So he wants those forwards engaged and making things difficult when it comes to forechecking. And it always starts on offense, right? Your forecheck kind of starts the defense. If you can make it difficult on the other team when they're trying to get the puck out of their own zone, that is really, really good. That means that you're going to control the puck. And the best defense is kind of controlling the puck and playing offense in the NHL. Now, when it comes to the actual defenseman, Bonus talked about closing the gap. He wanted a smaller gap between the attacking forward and the Blue Jackets defenseman. So that is exactly what it sounds like. When an opposing forward is coming up the ice, the space between he and the defender is the gap. So Bonus wanted the Blue Jackets to be a little bit more aggressive when it came to closing that gap and allowing there to be space between the defender and the forward. So I think just continuing to hone in on that. But when it comes to playing offense for the Blue Jackets, I think he wants to see them play with more speed and more north and south. I think when the Blue Jackets got away from that last season, that's when you saw them lose games. But when they were playing direct north-south hockey in your face, kind of the same thing that we're talking about on defense, but on offense, that's when we saw them successful last year. And they kind of got away from that at the end of the season. You know, I think Rick Bonus, he kind of hinted at it the other day that he's taking some time to evaluate some more things this offseason, and he wants to address them during training camp. He wouldn't say what some of those things are yet, but I view them as just fine-tuning some of the changes that he made last season And, you know, I think another year under Rick Bowness will only mean good things for the Blue Jackets when it comes to getting more comfortable and playing that way.
You know, I got to give you your flowers. One of the names that you mentioned as the potential for the Blue Jackets to draft was Oscar Hemming. And when I saw it, I smiled and I said, I see why they pay you the big bucks. Can you tell us a little bit about him? And what is the chances that we see Jaxon Smith or Caden Lindstrom with the Jackets this season?
All right, so I'll start with Oscar Hemming. Oscar just finished up his freshman season at Boston College. He's a younger guy, so he was one of the youngest players in college hockey last year, playing really as a 17-year-old. He kind of had a weird season last year. He was supposed to play in Canada, but his rights were not released by his team back in Finland. So, you know, a team back in Finland had his rights as a player, and they wouldn't release them to allow him to go play in Canada. So he said, all right, I'm going to go the college route. And he joined Boston College during the second semester, so he really only played half the season. So think about that. You're a young guy coming over from Finland, going straight into college, and you're playing with men in college. You know, the college hockey players overwhelmingly are older than the ones playing major junior in Canada. So you're a young guy playing against men, and you come over and play half a season, essentially, in college hockey. That's a hard thing to do. But he impressed enough to be drafted in the first round by the Blue Jackets. He's a big kid. I've seen him in person the last couple of days. You know, 6'4", 6'5", right around 200 pounds right now. Plenty of room to fill out. He's a good skater for his size. He has good skill for his size. And he profiles, you know, as a classic power forward in the NHL. A guy that can score, a guy that can be in your face, a guy that likes to play physical. He told us that. He likes to throw his body around. So it's a good ad for the Blue Jackets. And hopefully we get to see him in a couple of years' time. As far as it goes for the other guys, you said Caden Lindstrom and Jaxon Smith. Both of those guys are going back to college this season, both in the Big Ten. Jaxon Smith at Penn State, Caden Lindstrom at Michigan State. If those guys have good seasons there and they feel comfortable making the leap to the NHL, you could see them potentially with the Blue Jackets towards the end of next season, depending on how their seasons go in college. Because, you know, those NCAA playoffs and the national championship game, they kind of trickle into the end of the Blue Jackets season. So depending on how it works with those guys and their seasons, they could be with the Blue Jackets at the end of next year.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. Thank you, Dylan. We appreciate you, and we hope that you enjoy your 4th of July.
All right. You guys, too. Enjoy those barbecues. I know I will, and go Blue Jackets.
T-Bone and Tybus is sponsored by Capital Ford of Columbus. Find your dream ride and get approved fast at CapitalFordOfColumbus.com. That's the best of T-Bone and Tybus. Yes, this is pre-recorded, but Tybus is so dedicated, he's still here running the board. The Fan.
All right, Josh. So recruiting has picked up a little bit for Ohio State. They've landed some big-time recruits, particularly in the trenches. Mm-hmm. And it had me thinking, okay, when you go back and you see Indiana.
Hold on, you guys got to say the guy's name.
I'm not about to say that man's name.
Until somebody sends me a pronunciation guide with a phonetic pronunciation, I'm not going to attempt. I don't want to butcher this young man's name.
I would even attempt it, but I'm not even going to do that because I'm scared. But anyways.
I'm scared.
I am. I don't want to mess this up, and I don't need this show to get shut down until T-Bone comes back. But anyways, I was thinking about Indiana game and the Miami game. And I thought about just in the trenches. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that we physically got dominated in the trenches. Do you think that those two games impacted? Because before this, we were quarterbacks, wide receivers,
right.
Maybe a big time safety, some linebackers. But now it seems like Larry Johnson and Tyler Bowen has been the two guys that they've really harnessed on trying to get those guys top talent in the recruiting class. Do you think it's because Miami, Indiana?
So I think the Indiana game was a little bit different.
Okay.
And it's partially because of what Indiana does in their defensive front. Their mm-hmm. front seven is constantly on the move.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're just mauling you, pushing you around or whatever the case is. It's that they give you different looks and then guys just come free, mm-hmm. right? Like they're just unblocked defenders that you have to deal with. So
simulated pressure.
That's exactly what it is. A lot of twists, a lot of movement, a lot of simulated pressure. So I think that's a little bit of a different thing there. And I know it sounds maybe a little bit like a cope, and it kind of is, but like I truly do believe that they presented more schematic challenges than just getting dominated. And you can even look at the numbers. Like, Indiana wasn't running it down Ohio State's throat necessarily. Like, 3.5 yards per carry, not their best day on defense, but certainly not a day that kills you. Miami felt like a little bit of a different deal. Like, those guys were up there. They had some ass kickers up front and certainly exposed.
I mean, to be fair, when it comes to our O-line versus their D-line, two of their players went first round, didn't they? Akeem Mezzador went first to San Diego, right? I mean, excuse me, the Chargers, right?
Yeah, and by the way, their offensive line also had some really good linemen, too, yeah, right?
They had a tackle go.
Yeah, T-Rex arm. He went to the Giants.
Not T-Rex.
No, arms. Not Reuben Bain.
No.
The, Francis
yes. Mawanoa.
Yes. So they had some dudes up front that could cause problems. I think that is something that would open Ohio State's eyes. I would also open the wound a little bit and ask the question. Did you not think about this when Michigan was the team that was known to be the team built in the trenches for those years and the team that was dominating everybody up front? And if that was going to be the standard for how you would win national championships moving forward, then you would have to change it up. Like, I think it's short-sighted to say that it was those two games. I think in the back of their mind, they've always said, we need to improve. And maybe the opportunities didn't present themselves. Maybe the recruiting pitches weren't something that was hitting to the recruits. And right now, I think it's like certainly point of emphasis, but the recruiting is starting to match where the emphasis actually is as a program.
I think that they tried. You know, obviously, I was doing some NIL stuff, so I was there for some of those recruiting classes. So I can definitely tell you that they tried to hit on some of those big-time targets.
Yeah.
They just weren't. And I don't necessarily...
But the emphasis was always there, though.
Yeah, I can't necessarily remember why they missed out on
sometimes it just
guys.
Doesn't connect.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think that... If we're boiling it down to, oh, man, Miami whooped their ass up front, and now they're recruiting like this, like, I would say that would be a dereliction of duty on the coaching staff because there had been other times where they weren't more dominant team up front. Well, they've been thinking about this for a while.
Well, one of the things with Justin Fry when he was the offensive line coach was he never got the top recruits.
Right.
But when they got somebody out the transfer portal, he can coach them up and would be fine.
He developed some guys too, which again, I want to put this into context. That is the hardest position to be successful
with. Oh, yeah.
Recruiting and development have to go hand in hand there. And I think everybody was wanting Fry to like instantly just got to flip. And it's like, that's just not reality unless you're getting a bunch of guys out of the portal. So all that to say, I think these guys have been thinking about it for some years now. And we're starting to see it come to fruition on the trail.
So why do you think nowadays players, high school kids are more lenient to coming here opposed to a couple of years ago?
I think number one, the coordinator that they have in the building right now, I think it's pretty easy sell of, you know, this
Arthur
is a,
Smith.
Yeah, we want to mash. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a team that can be physical. We have a coordinator who is used to these heavy run schemes. Like, this is what we want to do. You mentioned the running back room earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We've got these younger running backs who are going to be really good players. Wouldn't it be great to become an All-American by opening up holes for guys like that? And then also, we've got this quarterback who you saw when he was clean. He's a really good player. We're trying to keep him there so he could throw it to this wide receiver who, when there's time, he can get behind coverage. I think there's so much that you can sell that is immediately visible to a recruit to say, yeah, I want to jump in on that.
It's going to be interesting to see this offense because for so many years, I would say since Ryan Day has taken over, we've been more of a 7-on-7-ish style team. You know, Urban was big on running the ball. That was his thing. But like when Ryan Day became the head coach, it's like, the offense really opened up when it came to the passing attack.
Right.
And I feel like even the year when we won the championship, you still had, you know, Jeremiah Smith, Omeka,
no doubt,
Carnell, and all those guys. But those two running backs, Travion and Quinshon, was a huge part of why they were able to do that. To me now, obviously, JJ is still one of the best players in the country. And you still got Julian. But is this the season that we actually are a run-first team?
Do you think
we get to here with Arthur Smith?
I think it's going to be a more balanced approach. And by the way, I think that's what they've been trying to get to over the last couple years. I have always been under the belief, and some of football has fooled us for the last few years, but I've always been under the belief that you need to have an offensive line that's really good and the ability to run the ball when you absolutely need to at a bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
You would like to be
part
in a place.
Part of the plan to win.
It is.
It's like number two.
It is.
Yes.
You need to be balanced just generally. But we watched what Michigan did. That was a run-the-ball team. When Ohio State won it, that was a team, as you just mentioned, they could run the ball effectively. And then looking at Indiana, all Fernando Mendoza, all the hype that he was getting.
They ran that piss out of the ball.
Yeah, they love running the ball. And I just think right now, and really forever to be successful, you got to run the ball.
Do you guys have faith in the run game for this year, particularly the offensive line that a lot of people were concerned about in the Miami game? A lot of people are looking at this as a strength, but a lot of people were down on the position group, and it's pretty much the same guys coming back.
But I feel like it's a tale of two halves with the Miami game. Like the Miami game, the guard situation, the right guard situation was everybody was on high alert for that.
Hmm.
And then I believe Austin got hurt at left tackle, correct? And they had to pull. So they at halftime, they pulled Austin and they switched to right guard. I think it was Ian Moore might have been in. I can't remember off the top of my head. But like the second half of Ohio State was totally different than the first. And even in the first half, like, the plays was open. The offensive line just kind of got beat on plays. If they blocked for just a tenth of a second longer and Julian saw it, people was wide open. So for me, it's there. I think that if you're going with that second half offensive line, you went up against two first round picks on a defensive line and was able to like pretty much neutralize them in the second half of a game. I feel like that offensive line had got a lot of confidence into that. And I'm confident that those guys, if they can do that to them, to a team that went to the championship game and was like a touchdown away from winning the thing, yeah, that's a championship offensive line in my personal opinion.
I also really believe that development is the most important thing for that position. And so if you're telling me that you have a lot of the same guys back who have one more year with Mick and one more year of going through an offseason and one more year of maybe listening to some doubters and building a little bit of that internal drive. Because I used to read the tweets. I don't know if you did, but I did.
Yeah.
You got to get going a little bit.
I told everybody that when I got the hate tweets, I took them as love.
Okay, I didn't go that far.
No, you know why?
Why?
Because if you was terrible and they didn't care about you, they wouldn't say nothing.
Okay, but it's like because the coach who coaches you hard.
Yeah, like they see something in you and they expect better out of you.
That's
so like that's just their passion coming out. So I never took it as like an insult or anything. It's like, I get it. Like, I definitely need to play better.
I used to read all the tweets. I listened to the radio sometimes, too.
Oh, you crazy. Now that I did,
I remember Common Man after we lost to Michigan State in 15. He was like, that Joshua Perry kid should never play football again.
He never said that.
He did.
Tebow has a famous tweet.
I know he does.
So
we work with people now who used to just poop on us, and it's all good.
Hey, it is what it is. I think, though, honestly, the best thing that happened for Ohio State last year was seeing two different defensive lines, two different ways that a defensive line can beat you. Mm-hmm. You talked about Indiana schematically drawing up things. Well, guess what? Our offensive line have that on tape. They can got a whole offseason to see different looks.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. When you're training an offensive line, like the chemistry comes from having the same five guys see all of these different looks so we know how to pick it up. So now that they've gotten beat on it, the question is, did they do enough this offseason as watching tape, working on the twists and stunts and all those things and being able to pick it up? If they keep those same five guys and those guys stay healthy for the whole entire season, when they see an Indiana or anybody else that do those type of things, they know how to beat it. And then physically, it's what Miami did. It was just a physical game with them. Well, another year with Coach Mick, like Josh said, to me, that should have you right. And plus, one thing about them at the Woody, if that offensive line is getting beat, they take that personally over there. So Coach Mick probably.
And they hear about it every day.
Yeah, they probably was on them all offseason trying to get those guys ready. So I'm actually eager to see what happens. I do think we're going to be better at running the ball. I think that was the one key factor that was holding this team back. I mean, we went through all these running backs and we just never could get an answer. I don't want it to always be solely on Julian. Like, I feel like a lot of games was on Julian. Even when Jeremiah and Carnell wasn't in the game, the run game still wasn't quite what we wanted it to be, and it was something that we wanted all season. So it'll be interesting to see.
There's nothing Bo Bishop can't do well, except find competent co-hosts. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan. Cool. The Reds are on the Fan's family of stations all season long. If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you. Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and the Fan 3. It's the best of T-Bone and Tybus. I know what you're thinking. This is so good you can't believe it's pre-recorded. But it is. So if a comment hits and we don't respond, that's why. The Fan.
All right. So Dylan, you can set this up. You threw this on the sheet. What is this article about this Big Ten expansion?
So basically, because of the Save College Sports Act that may or may not be implemented at some point, that will essentially prohibit conferences from expanding.
Okay.
So this article from Matt Hayes of Yahoo Sports, not Matty Ice, Matt Hayes of, of Yahoo Sports, he threw out the question of whether the Big Ten and the SEC should expand while they still have the opportunity, because that opportunity could be going away shortly.
Now, the interesting thing about this is the well is getting dry when you talk about expanding. There's not like a lot of teams out there that I will really want the Big Ten to go get. Obviously, there's nobody in the Pac-12. They kind of ended them.
Well,
the only team, the layup is Notre Dame. That's everybody, both conferences, both would probably take Notre Dame if they was willing to join.
They won't do it.
They won't. But if they did, I know we don't even care about where the region of it is anymore, but it just makes more sense for them to be in the Big Ten. And if they did that, that's the rest of the teams is pretty irrelevant to me, personally.
Would you look at a UNC? This is what people have suggested.
Well, basketball, Bill Belichick ain't got nothing coming.
I think you can make an argument,
you
want
to deal with him and Jordan Hudson?
That they might be a little bit of a sleeping giant. Like, if you had the right coach in there, and that is a state where apparently folks want to live there badly, like population shift, all those different things. Like, I don't know. It becomes interesting. If you had Big Ten resources to give to a place like UNC, does that not give them a little bit more juice to become a team that is year in and year out more competitive?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Not at all? No shot?
No.
So Indiana, no shot?
They got lucky.
Okay.
Oh, man.
that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, I think this is the world of collegiate athletics where it's like, if the right opportunity meets all of the resources, a highly resourced era, teams can become a little bit more attractive. I'm not saying that they should. I think this idea, first off, if the Big Ten is going to add, or the SEC, it feels like we're hitting the law of diminishing returns where you can't create all of the matchups that you would want with the teams that you would add anyway. So it'd be harder to sell all of this inventory as like interesting, because you'd end up getting, you know, who do you add? UNC. Okay, so UNC and Northwestern. How do you feel about that as a football matchup?
I'm not watching that.
Okay, that's kind of my
bad,
point on
bad
that.
Ball. So, bad ball.
I think you'd
it could be interesting. Well, is RJ Day there? I'll watch.
You'd want to trim from the bottom, but then you lose Indiana potentially winning a championship doing that. But that's the
not
only
if you
way,
start
I think,
today.
That's the only way I think you could actually get it done, adding new members, is you'd have to trim so you can create all of these matchups that are interesting.
So you want to add, let's say you said you want to add UNC and Duke.
I don't necessarily want to add them, but I'm just saying. Would you consider?
UNC, Duke, Virginia Tech, you said Notre Dame's probably not, but let's just throw them in the mix. Okay. So let's say you had four teams that wanted to join the Big Ten, but you had to cut four teams.
Great.
What's the four?
Well, Rutgers, we love you. You got to go.
Okay.
We don't. Love you.
Maryland.
Okay.
See you later.
We should have never done those deals in the first place. You got to go. How do we feel about a Northwestern?
Like, I think there's a more obvious third choice.
Aren't they
Purdue,
more?
Purdue, see you later.
Purdue should be gone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm having buyer's remorse on? Nebraska.
Ooh. Yeah. What have they done?
Sell out every game. I feel like Nebraska is one of them schools that
they're good for the brand.
They're on the cusp
every year.
They're so close.
Are they close?
You know who they remind me of? They remind me of like an Indiana.
They're close.
They remind me of an Indiana because I feel like they're seven and five
every year.
No, I feel like. First of all, they start off well, and then they can't finish a season to save their life.
That's what Maryland does.
Like
Maryland starts off like five and zero, and then blow it. Is Maryland going to be a playoff team?
Maryland at least got a quarterback.
4-0 every year.
They got a quarterback. The Malik Washington.
He's a really good player.
He's a good player. I don't know if they're going to keep him past this season.
Well, they kept him this year, which was important.
Yeah.
Locks might be gone, too.
Nebraska, I'm telling you, if they find a Kirk Cignetti.
If.
You don't believe in Matt Rhule?
No, I was never drinking the Roulade.
Couldn't you say the same thing? And this is, you brought up Purdue, but like, couldn't you say the same thing? Like, Jeff Brohm had Purdue playing pretty good ball.
Where
Jeff
Brohm
had, yes, he had Purdue.
He got
representing the Big Ten West.
What's our Lincoln Keyholes?
Yep. Yeah. So I guess my thing is like, it's a hard exercise to say you want to cut. And part of this is the history and the legacy of the Big Ten. But to me, I don't think you're at a point where you can continue to add in either the SEC or the Big Ten without saying that you'd want to trim a little bit of the fat.
So you never gave me the fourth team.
I don't know.
That's the decision you got to make.
That's why I don't make these decisions.
But that's not what they would actually do.
They wouldn't.
They would just continue to expand. I mean,
how do you create a football schedule with a 20-team conference? With a 22-team conference?
You got to go back to divisions.
That's ass.
And you got to.
You mean like legions and legends?
No, not
legions. Legions and legends and legions.
Leaders and legends.
No, those names were ass. We don't need that again. But like a true East and West again, I would be. Or maybe not, because then you would just get back into the imbalance of the East being so much better than the West.
Isn't that two conferences basically in
yes,
one?
Yes, like, that's essentially what it would
that's
be.
That's the issue. Because then.
But it's so about the bread.
How do you develop the schedule, though, is what I'm getting at. How can you ensure that we actually get good games
off
of it?
That's for the algorithm to figure out.
I'm at a place where don't touch it. Don't touch it. Just let it be what it is.
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it. Hmm. Because you unless you're cutting teams out, I wouldn't touch it.
Well, the two money-making sports are football and men's basketball, right? Are there any, Joshua brought up UNC, any team that's like kind of decent at both that you'd want to add? Maybe from like the Big 12, like Iowa State or BYU. Would you consider those schools?
Feels geographically palatable. And I know that doesn't matter because we've got California and Washington and Oregon in here.
That means nothing anymore.
But there's a natural rivalry in there already. So that could make sense if you're just like, can we add somebody who is mid but won't drag us down?
I don't think they football team because Matt Campbell's gone.
Yeah, we'll have to find out about that.
Who knows?
I mean, from a rival reason, don't touch nothing. Just let it, because y'all going to mess it up. Don't even touch it. Just let it be what it is. I hope that a Purdue and what's the other teams you say? Purdue, Rutgers, and them can find their Kirk Cignetti, and hopefully they can turn things around. That's where I'm at with that. I'm done with the whole expansion talk. We don't need to touch it.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio Sports Desk.